we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead. Okay, well, we've been talking about the RSV outbreak the last couple of weeks. I've been paying a little bit of attention to this one. It's been surfacing a lot, so we got a lot of updates there. And then this other story, which is, I think, we'll start today, my fellow Americans, and it is BQ1 and BQ11 have become the new dominant COVID subvariants. And there's some interesting things to talk about in regards to this. Welcome to America Out Loud Pulse. It is Malcolm Out Loud here with my co-host,
Dr. Peter McCullough.
So what I find in what I'm reading up about this in the backdrop is that, first off, this is the first time that the BQ1 and BQ11 now make up the largest share of new COVID-19 infections. And this is the CDC reporting. They account for 44% of the new infections, up from 33% the week before. And this is, I guess, an offshoot of the Omicron variant, I understand. And there's some other interesting points that the vaccines and boosters are not working with these, correct?
That's true. I mean, this is a breaking important story everyone should be aware of. You know, we had gotten comfortable with the idea that we're in the Omicron umbrella, the family of subvariants. BA4 and BA5 were around for months. And then as soon as we got a vaccine against BA4, BA5 subvariants, they quickly started to go away. It's almost as if the virus was waiting to mutate and find a way of you know, in a sense, escaping the new vaccines. And now we enter BQ1 and BQ11. Now, these variants are still Omicron, but they're different. There's a new mutation here, and this mutation is called it's called the N460K mutation. And it seems to help the virus get in through the ACE2 receptor. And in fact, the body would have to make an antibody against this mutated part of the spike protein in order to stop it. And in a paper by Q and colleagues, QU et al., they studied people who had antibodies against BA4 and BA5, and they almost did nothing against BQ1 and BQ11. So this is a counter to some stories out there in Reuters and I think a Moderna statement that said, oh, don't worry, our new vaccine's going to cover it. I'm saying, uh-uh. I think the virus has already found a way to get around it. And the vaccine manufacturers are going to be embarrassed again because now they have a vaccine specifically against something that is extinct.
But isn't it true, though, with these variants? I mean, from what I understand historically, they are designed to sort of trick first of all, they continue to fluctuate, they change, sort of like a chameleon, I guess, and they do outsmart the vaccine sometimes. I mean, isn't there a history of that?
They do. There were papers early on, one by Neeson and the other one by Venkatakrishnan, that showed that you get to about 20% vaccinated, that's enough of an ecological pressure where the virus is going to quickly kind of scoot away from it. With the new vaccines, we only got to about 10% of people taking them. Wow. And so I can't really say the vaccine program, because it's so unpopular, no one's taking them. That's not the cause. I just think that BA4, BA5 made its run, and enough people have gotten it, and now we're off to a new subvariant.
Yeah. Now, and I've seen those conflicting reports you just talked about with those manufacturers suggesting about the vaccines, but you just kind of know they're going to do that. But when you dig further into the story, I do see the messages that you just, and I wanted to get your opinion. You just clarified it for me that they're escaping, the vaccines and boosters are not working. Here's the thing. There's a couple of reports where I am seeing they're using, you know, they're saying this is kind of a, well, deja vu kind of moment, because it was right about this time last year, in fact, that the Delta variant of COVID-19 was becoming sort of old news at that point, they're saying. And then the Omicron variant appeared with the news that it was easily spread and could bypass the vaccines. And that's exactly what they're saying now with these subvariants, the BQ1 and the BQ11, very similar. I'm amazed at this point, Dr. McCullough, that this thing has got a mind of its own still.
It does. It's just an evolving story. Let me read you a quote from the paper Q et al. that is breaking the news on BQ1 and BQ11. The authors conclude, the perpetual emergence of SARS-CoV-2 variants with enhanced immune escape continues to threaten public health. Monitoring the immune escape of emerging variants will be critical to improving messenger RNA vaccine reformulation, assessing new broader coronavirus vaccine candidates, as well as directing ongoing public health measures. And I put in here, this is a politically correct way of saying the new vaccines are essentially obsolete. I think the authors were charitable to messenger RNA technology, but it's just that the messenger RNA technology doesn't have the responsiveness that the military originally thought back in 2012. It thought they could handle pandemics, but it looks like it's just not working.
Right. All right. Let me bring in the RSV now before we go ahead and talk about suggestions and ideas, because I think this, I talked to, I think it was a couple of weeks ago with you, you remember, about this, these phrases, and there's multiple words, but like triple-demic sort of thing, where these things are sort of, well, how do you say, convergent, I guess I'd say, in the public square and could potentially wreak havoc. And I've been following a lot of these stories, and it seems to me like there was some deep concerns about this winter season, more than just any sort of normal flu season, with this convergence that could wreak havoc. With the RSV coming into play now, is that a true statement to make? Is there genuine concern with this convergence of these things?
Well, there's certainly concerns separately regarding respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, a single-stranded virus. Now, it's very different than COVID. This has been around in the pediatric population for decades. Vast majority of cases are in children under age one. Okay, it's before COVID. Wow. There have been papers on adult outbreaks. This virus, it has what's called a fusogenic protein that allows the virus to kind of fuse into cells, and it affects the respiratory epithelium. It doesn't invade the human body like COVID-19. It's important to understand that. It's not invasive. It just basically affects the respiratory epithelial tract. And unlike SARS-CoV-2, what really is a problem is bacterial superinfection. So virtually everybody with RSV gets antibiotics, as they should, because they're going to end up with a bacterial superinfection. We have some established high-tech treatments for this in severe cases. One is called palivizumab. And this is a monoclonal antibody directed against the fusion protein. Randomized trials show about a 50% reduction in hospitalization. We have ribavirin, which is an old antiviral. Looks like nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories work well for fever. And then the societies are divided on steroids. The Association of American Academy of Pediatrics says steroids are not helpful. The Agency for Health Quality and Research, AHRQ, says they are. So steroids are commonly used at least for a treatment. Very importantly, in papers, there's one by Napper and one by Falsley. I'll take Napper first. Napper paper indicates that, the vast majority are pediatric cases under age one. They're in the hospital a day or two. Adults are in the hospital like 3 days at most. Wow. And again, they get antibiotics, get some respiratory treatments, and do fine. The Falsley paper is interesting. It's been quoted. Anne Falsley from the Department of Medicine Infectious Disease at University of Rochester, she thinks this is related to COVID. Hmm. And I've seen her comments in the news. And the leading theory is that maybe the kids have been in lockdown, or they're not having the usual challenges from infectious diseases that they have in daycare and school for a couple of years. It's thrown, in a sense, kind of the viral challenge and rechallenge patterns out of sync. Another theory put forward by British investigators, Aditi and colleagues, suggests there's a spike protein superantigen effect. That is, so many people have taken the vaccines or had COVID that the immune system is kind of misdirected towards COVID and not so responsive against RSV. Having said that, there are more cases of RSV, should be treated promptly. I think home nebulizers, quick, prescriptions of antibiotics, usually doxycycline or azithromycin, are fine, and people can get through it. But it is not COVID. It doesn't result in 1 to 2 month hospitalizations. It doesn't have the mortality risks that we know with COVID, and we'll get through RSV.
Now, and the hospitalization rate, though, for the seniors is escalated. I mean, you mentioned the young ones, and it can be a real problem for the RSV for the, like you say, the infants, the small ones. But the elderly is kind of a bit of a surprise, they're saying. And they're saying it's about, what, 10, more than 10 times higher than usual for this point of the season. Is that correct?
It's true. Well, remember that we probably have somehow exposure of our seniors with small children who will have it. So we're coming into the holiday season. But even in the adults in these papers, if they get hospitalized, it's a very brief hospitalization. It's not a prolonged hospitalization, and with prompt rebound with nebulizer treatments and antibiotics.
Yeah, and they lay out certain states that are really just to make note of this: South Carolina, Tennessee, Georgia, Mississippi, Texas, North Carolina, Alabama, Virginia, Maryland, New York City, Washington are all very, very high levels of influenza-like illness at this time last year. And the CDC is reporting all those markets are this is where the escalation of a lot of this is happening. It's quite a few areas there, obviously. So there's a lot to look out to. I mean, we could talk more throughout the program about best practices, but right now we've already covered the RSV outbreak and the BQ1 and BQ11, these new dominant subvariants. I just get a sense. I don't know. I'm thinking even the truth, Peter. I mean, thinking of my wife. I mean, who I worry about with these kinds of things because she still has ongoing lung problems. With the kind of damage she had, and a lot of people can relate to what I'm saying. They never. It. I don't know. We really don't know. The jury's still out whether people will ever get over some of this long COVID stuff. Or how long it stays long. It's a whole new chapter we're writing in life. So who the hell knows early, So we should be, I mean, people, I don't know. I just think we should maybe be more aware, do a little more diligence, because you don't want to get this stuff into your system and your lungs where they're already been challenged from prior incidents. I think we're more susceptible to these kinds of problems, are we not?
Well, you made a good point in my review of the RSV literature. Again, very different than COVID. The people who really get in trouble are those who have pre-existing lung disease like asthma or emphysema or cystic fibrosis. Okay, so that's an important point. The other point is that they present sufficiently similar that patients who come in with fever, cough, difficulty breathing, they should get an RSV, an influenza, and a COVID test. So there should be triple testing to figure out what they have, because otherwise, if we guess and we guess that someone has COVID and they really have RSV or vice versa, they're going to get wrong treatments because the treatments are different here. So we have to see more intelligent use of testing. Remember, there's PCR testing for all of these, but we want to see low cycle thresholds. CDC says cycle threshold less than 28 for COVID. With COVID, we can do confirmatory antigen testing. That is, do two tests to make sure we've got COVID. We don't have community COVID testing centers going on. Many people are long past this. And when we do have sick people, though, we do need to apply the right technology and be certain of the diagnosis.
Yeah, and I like what you say there. I mean, I really do. So no guessing games. And I think that's just really good advice to be certain, especially people who have prior injuries. I mean, I'm just thinking of all those folks, and there's a lot. We're talking millions. I mean, by golly, tens of millions of people here, and clearly hundreds of millions around the world have real struggles from COVID. I mean, really bad stuff. And anyways, I think we got to be really aware for sure. We'll continue to talk about best practices and all of these things, but I had a feeling on this, Dr. McCullough. I really did over these last few weeks. I just started seeing more and more and more reports, and the more you dig into it, the more concerning it is. And I don't know, it's kind of a combination of being diligent, but also not crying wolf all the time that there's another problem. But I think coming into the winter season, this is a little more than crying wolf. This is something where I think people need to be informed and educated on what the risks are. Don't you agree?
I agree. And, I don't want to be too alarmist, but the BQ1 and BQ11, based on what we know, actually could be a more severe subvariant. I have a patient right now with COVID-19, and you know, he's a bigger person. He's overweight, obese, and boy, he's right back to the same struggles we saw with Delta. And I've got full McCullough protocol going, and I think we just have to be responsive. We can't fall back into a surge and have our whole system begin to erode. So many Americans are enjoying freedom, getting back to normal life. I just think we're at a, I think the holiday season is going to be a test.
Oh man, that's really good. Yeah, what you say there. And I'm wishing great holidays for everybody. Amen. People deserve it after all that they've been through. Really, we just need, and so this is kind of being really respectful of the situation, being really, really careful here. I think, especially when people are out into the season, that sort of thing. And there's some real risk out there, friends. So, well, we are on, by the way, Q&A 45. And you know, in these, well, anyways, these other concerns we're talking about are real, real challenges. So let's get into the questions now and see how some of the surfaces, and I'm sure some of the best practices will come out of this as well. Anne writes in and says, I am desperately trying to find the actual studies that show that the more COVID jabs you get, the more likely to get infected, because my only two grandchildren are very young and the parents are medical and totally believe in vaccines. Wow. But they might be open to reading a study. What do you say to him?
You know, there are many sources of data. I think the UK, South Africa, have Australia have done the best. You can go to individual websites, but I think one of the sources to go to is Substack. The two people who've really done the most of work on this are Paul Alexander and Steve Kirsch, and they simply just reproduce the data that exist from these data sources. So I see Paul Alexander, Steve Kirsch on Substack, and just type in recurrent infection or infection and vaccine frequency, and you'll see the relationship. It is too, as people take more and more vaccines. I mean, one estimate now is about 90% of the immune system is erased with these progressive shots. So people get weaker and weaker, and then when they do get sick, it's a lot worse.
That's exactly the button that I was looking for, because that's what I'm seeing, that people are doing it. The more you're doing, then they get all the boosters, and then their system is really weak, their immune system, and they're not able to fight the next thing that comes in. That's actually what I'm worried about here, Dr. McCullough, with this season, actually, to be truth with you. And you know, it's not just saying this to be funny. I mean, even my wife has stepped out the other day in the colder weather and it took her breath away. That's never happened. She never had any problem with breathing, never been a smoker, never done any of that stuff. I mean, been a good a student of the game. But that's where you get COVID. You don't really fully rebound on that right away. No matter what you do, it takes time to get through it when you have COVID pneumonia, right? I mean, it's,
There's no doubt about it. And think about that. You're in Florida. Can you imagine if you were in Buffalo, New York, and you're shoveling the end of your driveway? I mean, for some seniors, we have to, you know, take a view that we have an aging society, and some of these places to live up there, Buffalo, Chicago, the whole North, shoveling snow, and the difficulties there are extraordinary. You know, what's another threat we're seeing more and more of? We should probably have some experts on the McCullough Report on this. Believe it or not, Malcolm, mold. I'm
Oh,
hearing more and more about mold. And, you know, I'm in Texas, and I can tell you the other day, we drove past just for fun the house that I grew up in. And that house is, gosh, it's like 50 plus years old now. And I am sure the AC system is the same, the ducts are the same. For 50 years now, we've been blasting AC systems, and they do accumulate water and dust, and they form the basis for which mold can grow. And so, you know, I don't think we have any idea of how big this mold problem can be just because of the aging HVAC systems in the, you know, in the South.
Yeah. Listen, you bring up a huge point. I just spoke about this to listeners the other day, the mold thing that you just said. You know, I had a very, very dear friend who was so sick, Peter, ill, and didn't really know what was going on or why. And it was wreaking havoc on her body in multiple ways. And she struggled, I mean, really bad. And I mean, it's very debilitating for your body. I mean, I can't even describe to you what she went through. I mean, it was, oh, horrible. And do you know, we found out it was mold.
I have to tell you one quick mold story. I had some senior citizen patients, wonderful couple, and they weren't in a particularly old house, but they were in a house. And when you get older, one of the things you don't do is go up in the attic. And so, they were in this house. Both of them started to have pulmonary conditions develop. The man worse than the wife, and they started to require oxygen. All these doctors. And they noticed a black spot in their living room ceiling start to develop, and it grew and it grew and it grew. And then one day, just boom, the whole drywall came down, and it was like a mountain of mold up there. And do you know what it was, Malcolm? It was a leak. So if the roof leaks and it drip, 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 and it forms the right environment, mold can start growing. So one of the things I've learned is every so often, go in the attic, take a look around. Make sure you don't have a chronic roof leak and are starting to grow a mold farm up in your attic.
Well, it's not just the attic, it's the walls of the house. So that's where it was with my friend. It was inside of the wall. And here's the problem with this mold, Peter, is it's the hidden enemy. You just that person that you just described that had the black dot, they were blessed, actually. And the fact that the ceiling falls down, that's even double blessed. What I'm suggesting is this COVID, this mold is hidden. It doesn't show itself in a lot of cases. It's behind the drywall, it's behind the wood, it's behind something, or it's under the bed. It's in some freaky areas. And for my friend, it was under the bed. She never even knew. And it was wreaking havoc with her body. Am I right?
Yeah, and there are now sophisticated diagnostic techniques. I know in Dallas, a couple of very advanced practices, people can go and get tested, and either the tests are very accurate, either getting exposure or they're not. But I bring this up because we've had so many people get COVID. Everyone's attributing every pulmonary issue to COVID, and we wouldn't want somebody to get burned with a chronic mold exposure they didn't recognize.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And again, breathing, lungs, that's all a problem for a lot of people with long COVID. I wasn't planning on doing this, but I've got to bring it up right now about Peter, because we're talking about mold. And again, forgive me, I was not planning, but we got to tell people this is where we just talked about the RSV. We talked about the BQ1, the BQ11, the subvariants. We got mold, we got all this stuff, man. And I mean, come on, and I'm not, I mean, it's like I just want people to get on, like you said, enjoy the holidays and have a happy moment in their life. And God knows everybody deserves that. I really mean that with what folks have been through. So we've been trying to guide folks here. Listen, one of the most unique relationships we've had with a company is the Genesis folks, truly, truly special people. I bring it up because 2 weeks ago I got my the atomizer in, and it's the atomizer. What's it called again? It's oh the UX4, UX4. I got to remember that the UX4 atomizer. It's like the fogger. It's the same thing. But here's the point I'm getting to. HOCl is the hypochlorous kills these sort of things. It fights the mold. It fights the pathogens, the super. But I want to say something else. I want to ask you something. We talk about these variants, and I'm just thinking here a moment. Seriously, now we talk about vaccines not working, boosters not working, new vaccines, new boosters not working. The manufacturers are doing juggling acts trying to get this out to the market. It's like the new candy for the week. Here it is, another one. I mean, and then this stuff is weakening your immune system. Why would you even go down those roads? When you can get something like a UX4, plug it into the house and let the HOCl clean the air, and then it fights the mold, it fights the pathogens, it fights the, and it doesn't matter what the variant is that it's going to wreak havoc with that. Am I onto anything here, or does that make any
You're
sense?
right. I mean, we use the term, it's virucidal, bactericidal, and fungicidal. And so these agents that basically kill these bugs, the bugs can't out-mutate them. They can't, nothing's out-mutated, good old bleach. We use bleach to clean various things. So this is an important point. The vaccines and all this technology where we're trying to pump it in the body, we can do things to improve our environment. And by doing that, it's very important we reduce the inoculum. We get exposed to things all the time, but the goal is not to get a big glob of RSV or a big glob of mold or fungus. And so it's the inoculum that's being reduced with these types of approaches. I can't wait to fire mine up. I was gone this weekend. It's still in the box.
Well, let me tell you how you do it. You get that UX4 in. We took it out of the box and my wife looked, and she said to me, these are her words. She said to me, because I said, would you take a look at that, please? We got to get that plugged in and get that working, please. About, like I said, about 2 weeks ago, before the last show we did last week, Peter, you know, she gets it out, just, and she reads the instructions and she says to me, oh, this is easy. I said, oh, thank God. I said, because I did not want to deal with it. And she says, okay. So she plugged it in. And sure enough, you dilute the HOCl. I think it's, I don't have it in front of me. I think she said it was 9-to-1 or whatever. It comes with you, whatever the instructions are. I think it's 9-to-1.
You don't have to use that much. I know it comes with a good supply. I know the original one, I still haven't used up the supply. Yeah. So the supply they give you is very generous. Yeah. Because you do dilute it down.
And then it stays down.
Yeah, it stays good in there. I'm going to do it. I just didn't want to do it right in the middle of Monday Night Football last night.
Okay. I love it. So, I love it. Well, once you put it in there, let me just tell you now what happens. It's so cool. It's in the little container. You know, you get a little black container there. You pour it in, you dilute it. And then it just, you can see the dry mist come out. And this thing's been running now, and it's absolutely amazing. And you know what else, Peter? It's peace of mind, peace of mind. And we're going to have friends and family over and others with the holidays and, you know, really try to enjoy this year, this go around. And I feel so much better that that's there. So I recommend every household get this. And it's, and the other cool thing is use the code OUTLOUD. You get 15% off the product. Now, this is at a better price point. I don't remember what the price is offhand, but it's less money than the Genesis Fogger. Now, the Genesis Fogger is transportable. Let me not confuse you people. You go around from room to room. You've used that, Peter, right? You've used the Fogger.
Right. Well, we have a couple of commercial buildings. And so my contractor, he's got the Genesis Fogger. Man, I tell you, he uses that. You know what it's really good for is actually sterilizing rooms. So if somebody changes out of a room, I always almost wonder if the hotels would start using it. It makes a lot of sense because you ever checked into a hotel room and then you wonder who is there before you?
Not only that, but I just want them to put clean sheets on.
Yeah. But you know how many people with COVID have stayed in hotels and then they do something? So I think that's where the Genesis Fogger comes in. This, the new model you're talking about, this is one where you want to put it maybe like in your living room or where people are going to gather.
We got us in a gathering area. You're exactly right. It's up on a counter high. And, you know, it's a nice looking unit. It's very nice. I mean, it looks very state of the art. It's not invasive at all. You put it right there and that dry mist is gone. It's absolutely perfect. And by the way, I have to tell you just a sidebar here, my friend. And listen, this past weekend, by the way, you were talking about mold a moment ago here. I was outside on my deck with the outside. I love sitting outside at this time of the year. It's just absolutely beautiful. And there was some mold on the, the pavement, you know, the ground, right? Mm-hmm. These nice rocks and pavement, you know. And, you know, and you know what I did? So I had all this out there. And I see the black spots. I said, oh, man. And I'm really get skittish with this mold thing because I've seen my friends suffer. Do you know I went in and I have a pressure cleaner and I got my pressure cleaner out and I moved all the stuff off of there and I needed some physical labor anyways, because you know how it is when you're in this, you know, you're locked into walls. You know what I mean? You get a little stir crazy, you know? So I needed something to break from that pattern anyways. I got that pressure cleaner out there. Peter, you've been so proud of me. I cleaned the whole deck out there, spent a couple hours, ran behind on things, but it felt really good. Pressure cleaned that whole deck, got rid of that black area coming up. And put a heavy, heavy bleach disinfectant down there to kill that. I think you got to pay attention to this stuff because, especially when you're sitting out there, you don't want to be breathing that mold in. You know what I mean? So, anyways.
So this was one of these pressure cleaners that's water, right? It's pressurized water.
That, and I put bleach in. We put bleach all on it on the ground. That's right. Because as you said, bleach is strong. As you said, it kills stuff like that. And man, I got that pressure cleaner, went right in, wake all the neighbors up. No, middle of the afternoon. No, I can't do that.
Yeah, I tell you, I think there's something very primal about spraying water hard and just blasting stuff off of there. It gets the juices flowing. And you just want to keep going and going, spray everything in sight. I got to tell you what, you can come over to my house anytime. I've got lots of things you can spray.
God bless you. I know. Just finding the time to do it. I'll tell you what, I enjoy it. Actually, there is a sense of accomplishment to your point when you're not only seeing it all come clean, but you're just doing some, I don't know, there's something about it. Maybe it's a man thing, I don't know, but I actually enjoy doing it. I could have hired somebody to do it, but I actually like doing it. You know what I mean? You know? So I had no problem doing it, brother. Anyways, we got a little sidebar here, but I actually like that because you might get a tip out of it, my friends, a little bit there. So let's take a quick pause here right now. We'll get back to all the questions here and continue on here. You're listening to America Out Loud Pulse.
We know you love the versatility and portability of the Genesis Fogger, but sometimes you just want to set it and forget it. Well, we heard you. Introducing the UX4 HOCL Atomizer. This stationary unit quietly protects you and is perfect for smaller spaces. With over 250,000 units sold in Japan, it's now available in the United States. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to see the UX4 in action and receive a 15% discount on either Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
Do you know there's no other condition that I'm aware of where vitamins and supplements make such a big difference than COVID-19? We have an abundance of data that we need to be replete with a variety of micronutrients, and that includes vitamins, minerals, and other substances our bodies need. I rely on Healthy Cell Super Boost. That's Immune Super Boost. It's a gel pack that can be taken every day. I like to do it before I exercise and before I go out. It's a wonderful supplement. It gives me the immune super boost that I need. Go to healthycell.com, use the promotional code OUTLOUD, and get a discount on your first order. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
These days, every time you turn on the news, it seems like there's a new threat to your health. Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top and shoot it down, or mix it in water. Boost your immunity. Go to healthycell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. Healthycell.com, code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com, code out loud.
All right, well, now we gave you all those stories and you're up to speed on a whole lot of stuff here. We're joining you back here at America Out Loud Pulse. It is Malcolm Out Loud here along with Dr. Peter McCullough, and a privilege to be with you always, my fellow Americans, and to all of our beautiful people around the world that listen into the network here. We really appreciate you and so happy you're with us here. Thank you. We're in Q&A 45. And again, if you missed the top of the broadcast, you definitely want to go listen. BQ1, BQ11, we covered pretty extensively there. And this RSV, you've been hearing a great deal about. But also, we have some bonus footage there for mold and some stories there that we shared with you here. Moving on here now, and let me get right back to the questions. And we read, I think I read, yeah, I read Anne already. Okay. So Rosalind says, my husband will be having hip surgery here this month, most likely with the VA. He had two Moderna COVID vaccines in February, March of 21. We have heard of a type of blood clot in people who had the vaccine, sometimes in every organ. We are concerned that this could affect the surgery. We have not heard doctors mentioning that this is affecting surgeries, but have heard funeral directors saying that they are noticing this in dead bodies. Have you heard of this being a concern?
Okay, let me take the dead body situation. This is important because this comes up a lot. When the human body dies, the blood is liquefied. And when morticians receive the body, they actually drain the blood out. They access the major blood vessels and they drain the blood out of the body. What morticians noticed in the vaccinated people was that the blood was not readily draining out of the human body. And so they literally couldn't get the blood out so they could perfuse the body with the preservative. So then they opened up blood vessels and they saw these long tubular casts of the blood vessels that were rubbery. And anything in the human body that's rubbery at autopsy or at death is typically what's called amyloidogenic. Amyloid is the abnormal folding of proteins. And there's probably about 30 or so amyloidogenic proteins in the human body. What's been learned is that the spike protein from the vaccine actually does get in blood clots and makes it amyloidogenic. That's a part of the kind of the new medical literature on COVID-19. So that's what happens at postmortem. We know that the vaccines themselves are a risk factor for blood clots, and so is COVID-19. And in fact, people who've had COVID-19 and taken the vaccines, they're at even higher risk. So in this man, I'd want to know, did he also have COVID-19 once or twice? Having said that, with hip and knee surgery, the rate of developing a blood clot, Malcolm, believe it or not, is about 25 to 50%. It's huge. And so that's before COVID. So now that this person is even more likely to develop a blood clot, what they want to be sure is that they're put on prophylactic blood thinners. So as soon as the surgery is done, they give blood thinners. They can give subcutaneous shots of what's called enoxaparin or low-molecular-weight heparin. They can use oral anticoagulants. But this person must receive blood thinners, and they must be continued after the surgery, typically for 30 days.
Wow. Well, that will surely help you, Rosalind. And that's good advice, to be sure. You know, I had this thought as you were talking. You know, you ever get this sense? I got to ask you this question. You know, I've thought about it before. Like, when I die, like, I don't want there to be a body there. Like, I just want to self-implode somewhere, remove myself from the earth. You ever think in those terms, or is that just me?
You know, I never thought in those terms, Malcolm, but it came up recently. In the last 6 months, my wife's father's passed away, and my father passed away, and how we handled it was so different. You know, my wife is, she is an Israeli Arab. She's a Christian Palestinian. And from a very ancient line of Christianity, goes way back to the Gentiles, were some of the first Christians. And so when we contacted her priests and people along her lines, we said, well, you know, what do we do? And they said, the body must be returned to Israel. And he was in my house in Dallas, Texas. I said, oh my Lord, are we really going to do this? And my wife, bless her heart, she did everything with the consulate, the Israeli consulate, Jewish community, everything, and his body was returned to Israel, a place called Ramleh, which is near Lud and outside of Tel Aviv, between Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. And that was his sojourn. And they had a 300, 400 person funeral for him there. And that's how their culture, handled it. My father passed away in the last few months, and very different, Irish American, didn't want any life support, and so had a cremation. And the cremation allows a funeral to be done when people can get together. So we're actually going to have the funeral right after Thanksgiving. So two very different ways to handle it. There's no right or wrong way. I think the main thing I've learned in this, Malcolm, with death, it's very important. Right. It's an opportunity to elevate that person's life. And I think it's very important to do that.
Yeah. Amen. I love what you say there. You know, I just want people to have a party. I remember as a kid going to those funerals and wakes. They're so morbid and disgusting. I don't go to them anymore. Like if you're dying, I say goodbye to me while you're here, because I'm not going to the funeral in the wake kind of thing. I just don't like them. And I don't care who it is. I don't care who the person is. I'd rather have a party or a celebration of life or something. That make any sense? I don't know. I'm weird.
It's true. Well, you're probably Scottish or Irish. I know I'm Scots-Irish, and that's the traditional wake. We actually have a party.
Exactly.
To get out the beer, and people celebrate someone's life, and it's more of a joyous event. It's very interesting. I mentioned the Middle Eastern culture. Do you know there's some sects of various Middle Eastern religions? Malcolm, some of them actually wear black for a year.
Yeah, I know.
That they are solemn for a year, and they really, in their culture, they don't express joy for a year after the passing of a loved one. It's really, you know, how different cultures handle death is very interesting. Many times we don't talk about it.
No, we don't. This is fascinating. I'd love to do a show one day, just you and I talking about this afterlife and death. I just find it fascinating. But the party thing is something that is, and I love this idea of celebrating. What you say is so important, friends, that if we celebrate that life, isn't that just so much more interesting than the morbid impact of everything that goes with that? We just take a moment and we look at the flip side of all this, which is why I remind everybody all the time, Peter, really, that we are blessed with this life and we need to count our blessings and we need to treat life accordingly. And I really mean that. That's why I tell listeners all the time, count our blessings, man, no matter what. It's a beautiful thing that we're here and living and breathing on this amazing planet, on this blue marble that floats through the universes of universes. And I just love it. Absolutely love it. We definitely have gotten sidebarred today, my friends. I'm sorry. But anyways, I find it interesting. And speaking of death, Sheila, I don't know why this is here, but she says, I am wondering, are you seeing people die from the virus who haven't had shots? Not the virus while they are sick, but a year later after just having the virus, no shots or any longstanding ailments just from the virus.
I'm definitely not seeing deaths from the virus in 2022. I can tell you that categorically. I've checked with so many people in my circles. The Omicron variant is simply not deadly. A very important paper, Chin and colleagues have shown this now. 59,000 prisoners, 17,000 workers, all, you know, congregate settings, carefully tracked. Once somebody's had COVID and they're having a second or third infection, zero, really negligible risk of hospitalization and death. We simply don't need to worry about it. Even first timers now are very easily treated. I think the issue of COVID death is really, I think we can put that behind us now. I'm much more concerned about people who have different permutations of vaccines and COVID. And I'm very concerned about heart damage, inflammation, blood clots, neurologic damage. I think that's now the new wave of injuries and deaths that we're seeing.
Okay. I want to get into this one from Tina. She had sent this in a few weeks back and I hadn't had a chance to get to it. So a couple paragraphs, so bear with me here. She starts off, dear Dr. McCullough and Malcolm, thank you from the bottom of my heart for being the beacon of light in these dark times of our history. You are truly heroes in my book. Your courage and bravery in serving the humanity is just unprecedented. God bless you. Now, I read that part of it. I get a lot of those kinds of messages in. I don't always say them on here because we get lots, and it would sound like I'm, self-aggrandizing or something, but I just the way Tina put it, I just felt I wanted Dr. McCullough to hear that more than anything. And that's a beautiful thing to say, Tina. Now, on to her quandary here. I was wondering if you ever come across the GI symptoms following COVID vaccination. I received the first and only dose of the Pfizer shot in September 21 as part of the mandatory vaccination pressed upon us here in Canada. Wow. About a half a year later, I started having a pain in my stomach on a daily basis. And then she was prescribed Dexilant PPI after this gastro procedure she had done to lower the production of acid in her stomach. Yeah, that helped a bit, but I'm still having dull pains almost every day. I also have an abnormal heart rhythm, which became much worse after vaccination. Could this all be related to the vaccine, I'm wondering? Did you have patients in your practice with similar problems? I mean, the results are normal, but the patient experiences pain. Could it be the spike protein production still undergoing quietly in my body?
Well, let me just talk about vaccine abdominal syndromes. We haven't talked about them much, but it's been reported in the literature that some of the slow draining veins in the abdomen, the portal vein, for instance, can develop a blood clot or partial blood clot with vaccination. So a portal vein thrombosis, usually acutely, abdominal pain, right upper quadrant pain, and then it's identified by CT scan. Anybody who has Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, or diverticulitis, the vaccine can make it worse with inflammation. I recently had a young man where actually he was diagnosed with Crohn's disease, and I think the vaccine may have brought out that underlying condition. We know that the vaccines very, very rarely, I mean, been case reports of it, though, can actually cause a hepatitis. And the hepatitis can be an autoimmune hepatitis or reactivation hepatitis C, typically happens in older people. The hepatitis C case, I'm aware of, was fatal. It's published in the literature. This case seems like it's fairly remote from the vaccines, appears to be nonspecific. Thank goodness it's none of the serious diagnoses that I've mentioned. And I doubt that the abdominal situation is directly related to the vaccines. It's also pretty far away in distance in terms of having heart arrhythmias or palpitations. So I tend to pursue more of a conventional approach here and not implicate the vaccines.
Okay. All right. Vicky says, I was wondering if chelation therapy is being considered or studied as a possibility for those people who've taken the shots. I have personally had chelation therapy for mercury issues, and it sure helped me. I understand chelation removes toxic metals such as lead or mercury. So how might that work for aluminum or graphene removal?
Yeah, chelation has been tried. Unfortunately, in randomized trials, it's never really panned out to influence outcomes, but it's been used, as she mentioned, to try to remove metals and various things from the body. The spike protein is encapsulated within cells or within exosomes, and I don't think it's going to be amenable to chelation. Graphene oxide, despite all the talk on this, still has not been proven. It's used in so many household items. I think it's going to be really hard to pin that down. And the companies have not disclosed what's the full ingredient list in the vaccine. So I'm not too hopeful about detoxing, like physically pulling it out of the body. People have a sense of it's in my body, you know, just got to get a vacuum cleaner out or get Malcolm's power washer and power it out of the body. No, somehow this is taken up into cells. It's tougher than that.
Yeah, that's a good point. A lot of people do wonder how they can get it out of there, and many of them are regretful for ever putting it in there, frankly, from the vaccine point of view. And I feel horrible for those folks. A lot of arm twisting went on back in that day at that moment of time, you know. Stephen says, here's another one. I can't believe this question is next. Stephen says, how do you reverse the vaccine? This was not planned, I promise you. JC, he says, our friend has a son with joint custody with the father, and he took her to court to have the son back. There was a lot of this going on, very ugly, ugly human stuff. To have the son vaccinated and won, it immediately took him to get the vaccine. What can she do about it now? She's very concerned about the next shot, too. Please help. You know, there's nothing worse than this sort of thing, Peter, to put the fear into somebody, a loved one, an ex or a spouse or an ex-spouse or a friend, and do something like that to the kid. I mean, I can't say anything that's worse than this, you know?
I would love to know, out of all the divorced parents out there, what percent of them agree either, yes, we should have the kids take vaccine, or no, we shouldn't, and then what percent disagree? I would really, really be interested in knowing that, because we only hear about the disagreements. And you're right, they go to court cases and people try to get various witnesses or guardians and experts. And it's been all over the map. If I had any advice to parents is lean on the side of free choice and lean on the side of being conservative. A conservative approach would be, listen, let's not take a risk with a new genetic vaccine that we can't get out of the body. That would be conservative. What would be kind of radical or would be aggressive would be, give them a vaccine. You know, that's aggressive. And I just think radical and aggressive is not what we want to do with child custody type of approaches. I just think my gut tells me be conservative. Having said that, we don't have any ways of pulling it out of the body at this point in time. There doesn't appear to be any fairness in the courts. There's all kinds of cases, Malcolm. There was a case in Texas where, again, the parents disagreed and the father wanted to go to Atlantis in the Bahamas. He just took his kid and got vaccinated anyway, right in the middle of a Supreme Court case. And nobody seemed to care. I mean, it's a lawless environment out there. I would not encourage parents to use the court system for this. I think they should try to work it out amongst themselves and come to some agreement and certainly weigh in the child's view on this. Children can really start to give their opinions, you know, clearly after age 12, but sometimes more mature kids earlier than that.
Yeah, I hope that helps you, Stephen, but that's a tall order there, obviously. Janice says, I have friends who chose to get the newest vaccine, the one tested on 8 mice. What are your views on vaccine shedding? And practically for me, what would be the time period, if any, before I can safely see these friends again? Wow.
Shedding is probably a 30-day event. It could be longer. Fertig and colleagues showed circulatory messenger RNA in the blood for 2 weeks. Hannah's shown messenger RNA in breast milk. So the direct type of shedding is breastfeeding, kissing, sexual intercourse, you know, really close contact like that. I think casual contact, handshaking, seeing people, you know, over for dinner and things like that is pretty low risk. The seroprevalence now is nearly 99%. There's a recent paper from Framingham that showed that. So everybody's been exposed to it. Everyone's got some antibodies against spike protein. I'm not worried at all, I think, about spike protein. But I think, you know, people who are unvaccinated are saying, listen, I don't want this messenger RNA. That's really what they don't want. And I'd say probably 30 days.
Okay. All right. Good. Good to know that. Didn't know that. All right. Madge says, what are the chances? Okay. What are the chances of getting COVID-19 again if you had it in November 2020? Now, she's asking that question. And let me also put out to you, Dr. McCullough, we talked up front about the BQ1 or the BQ11. What are the chances of people getting those particular gens that have had it? You know, people are going to ask those questions.
Of course, it always depends on exposure. An easier question to ask is, what's the protection, the theoretical protection? If they're exposed to somebody with red hot BQ1, what type of protection do they have? The answer is about 60% from the 2020 infection. Now, what's the protection against hospitalization and death? I've covered that in the Chin paper, nearly perfect. So yeah, you could get it again. It's going to be like a mild cold, but you're not going to end up in the hospital.
All right. There you go. There you go. And then again, if you have Cofix RX with you, you'll be able to nip that in the bud. But that's another story. The nasal hygiene is certainly effective. And vitamin D, get the vitamin D in you as well. And that's the thing I would say to all these people, your immune system, get it up there. Keep stay healthy. All of those things are really helpful. And ask, can an unvaccinated person get COVID-19 from other people, assuming there is no exchange of body fluids?
Yeah, so an unvaccinated person literally can just breathe the air. And if somebody is sick with COVID and they've coughed into the air, there's a cloud there. It's almost like breathing in cigarette smoke, and that's how they get COVID.
Well, and that's the same, correct me on this, Peter, but that would be the same with RSV or any of these things we talked about.
It's true. Now, RSV is probably a little bit more droplet related, so you have to be in the direct line of a sneeze. The same is true with influenza. COVID is just uniquely contagious. And so COVID—
Because it lingers in the air.
Yeah. So you think about somebody smoking cigarettes and you walk through and you kind of smell the cigarette smoke.
Right,
that would be about the same level. Boy, if you could smell COVID, there you go. You're breathing it in your nose and mouth. And that's the reason why Cofix RX and these various nasal and oral washes are so important. Recently I was at a meeting and I was sitting next to somebody up on a stage on a panel, and this guy was sick. He was sick. He had Kleenex and the snot was going, and I couldn't get away from him. I was on camera and I'm right next to him. I'm like, oh my gosh, I am cooked. I am going to be so sick. It's about 3 hours. And you know how it is when you're around somebody sick and you start thinking, am I sick? Am I getting sick? You had asking yourself this. Yeah. Man, I made a beeline to my hotel room and fired up the Cofix RX. I got to tell you right now, it saved me. I didn't get sick.
Yeah, I told listeners that yesterday. It saved my wife's mom, the Cofix did. And speaking of which, here's a similar question, I guess, from Anne. She said, Dr. McCullough, you didn't specify in your article dated December 30th, 21. I guess that must have been an older one. Maybe that was the Pope. I don't know. Anyway, she says, if it is important to use distilled or bottled water for the povidone iodine nose and throat rinse. So I wanted to get that clarified. Is tap water okay to use?
You know, the thing that drove me crazy in the development of this, I dealt with so many dentists and so many ear, nose, and throat doctors and experts on this. And, you know, they would say use distilled or purified water. And I would say, why? Because we're going to put iodine in it anyway. Iodine's a disinfectant. Why would we want to get purified water? And the idea is, well, if it has impurities in it, it's less likely to form concretions at the bottom, what have you. I think it's irrelevant. You know why? Because we're using small volumes now. You know, people are initially making, you know, they were making a, you know, like a big gulp size cup out of this. And it's just, you don't need that much. We just make a little thimble of this, a little shot glass. You're going to use it up or have it in a spray bottle. So no, I use tap water. I think the thing to make it more tolerable is a pinch of salt. The human body likes saline, and just a little salt in the water and the iodine. Don't make it too strong, whether it's iodine or peroxide. I've learned now you only need a few drops in a typical spray bottle. You don't need gobs of it. And if it burns, it's too strong.
There you go. All right. Last one here. Diane, she says, do you think we will have a Nuremberg 2.0 anytime in the near future? I am reading a novel written by Christopher Dodd, the son of one of the main prosecutors of the trial. A lot of the novel is based on the 300 letters he sends home to his wife during the 18 months he spent in Nuremberg during the trial. So I'm just wondering, do you think we will have a Nuremberg 2.0 anytime in the future?
Boy, if we have a Nuremberg 2.0, it's probably going to be in the same time frame, honestly, as after Nazi Germany. It's not going to happen right away. You know, one of the people calling for it just emailed me. I was so shocked to get this email from Christine Anderson. Have you seen her, Malcolm? Christine Anderson is a member of parliament from the EU. I believe she's from Germany. And I have to tell you, she is on fire. You have to watch some of her videos. She's calling out all the fraud with the vaccine manufacturers. She is just sees things very clearly. She's very strong. She gets up there, and I'm so impressed with Christine Anderson. Wow. She's very similar to Malcolm Roberts, is another one in Australia. We have some members of parliament in the UK recently who spoke out. We have Senator Ron Johnson here in the United States. You can almost go to any country and find a couple people who really see things clearly and are unafraid to speak out. She's one of them. If Nuremberg 2.0 goes, I would think Christine would be a player. She actually, I see her address right here, European Parliament in Brussels. So I'm not sure if she's actually from Belgium or is she from Germany, but look her up, Christine Anderson. You really like her videos.
Yeah. And so obviously the answer is, like you mentioned, the time span, but it could happen at some point, especially the more time that happens between the event and the future, right?
Well, no doubt about it. I mean, as more information comes out, there's just nothing good about these vaccines.
Yeah. And, you know, I was just thinking on a final thought to you, Peter, I was just looking. I did a show. You remember Paul Harvey, the great radio voice. I did a show, a few months back. Well, maybe 6-8 months ago. And it just, as you were just talking about the Nuremberg 2.0, we were just discussing it. And the show was, If I Were the Devil. Remember his, If I Were the Devil, Paul
it's
Harvey,
true. You know? And what was his, final line he always used?
The rest of the story.
The rest of the story.
And so if I did a new version of If I Were the Devil in 2022, it was all related to a lot of the crazy stuff we'd been through. I did a whole version of that with Paul Harvey on air, actually. It was quite fascinating. If I were the devil in 2022, what would you do? Well, you'd unleash a bioweapon onto the world, right? I mean,
it's another good song quickly is remember Rolling Stone's Sympathy for the Devil? Mick Jagger?
Yeah.
Oh, it really applies. It's almost as if you could actually see, you know, these inflection points and honestly, demonic types of motives and actions.
Yeah, that's the beauty of music. I mean, it's so relatable, and it just takes you to that moment. And the lyrics in a lot of these songs of past do fit some of the things we're through today. You know, it always comes down, my friend, to a fight of good and evil. That is always my answer to these kinds of things. It's here, it's going to be here, and we, being the good folks, have to fight the good fight, and we do, and we will. And the good news is, good wins in the end, not evil. How's that? So there you go, Peter. Good wins in the end. Oh, that is a wrap here, my fellow Americans, and all of our dear friends. God bless all of you, wishing you a jump in your step here, and thank you for listening to America Out Loud Pulse. Always a beat ahead.